Danny Mac the Call on Fox Sports Midwest. It's the Fast Lane with BT, Ronj, and Randy. 303, your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. One catchphrase that has really taken hold in the last decade or so in Major League Baseball is sample size. And gentlemen, small sample size, but I will tell you this, without equivocation, the best pitching staff in Major League Baseball belongs to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh, baby. Yeah.
Two-game sample.
Zero, yeah, two 0.00 ERA.
It's as good, as it gets. It's absolutely as good as it gets. And the Cardinals, certainly we know the Cardinals had to take advantage of a schedule that got lighter. They did that at home. They rattled off three against the Pirates. Then they win both of these against the Royals. So big picture, it's about winning ball games. And lo and behold, here the Cardinals are yet again tied atop the standings. Unreal, first of all, that's the case, but a great case. But more so than just the Cardinals needing this, just to start with the pitcher, Dakota Hudson needed a good outing, and he needed one desperately.
And he gave it to the Cardinals, and we talked yesterday about the possibility of him pitching in the postseason. And it's hard at this time of year for a rookie pitcher who was in the starting rotation at the beginning of the year to do something he's never done before. To me, that made last night all the more impressive, because I really don't count, once we get on to this point in the season, fellas, I don't count on young pitchers being really effective. And when they are, to me, it's a bonus. I'm talking about a rookie pitcher who's never gotten to this level of innings pitched before.
And so there's a difference, because we've seen in the past a guy come up from AAA at about this point of the year, and then it's like, wow, he's on a little bit of a tear. But in the meantime, they were able to limit the innings and get him ready for the stretch run. But it is difficult when you're finding a guy as it's getting later and later into August and then into September, which he's never done as a starting pitcher before, to know what to expect. And I don't expect him to make the turn like Jack Flaherty did, where Jack had the awful June, and then his last seven starts have been ridiculous. The last three, he's gone seven each time and hasn't given up a run. Like, Jack has been amazing. I don't expect him to do exactly that, but I did want to see if Dakota Hudson could get over the hump a little bit. Now, it's if he just goes right back to having his struggles and only, you know, throws 90 pitches in five innings his next time out, or four innings next time out, it means very little. But I think that this is a big confidence builder for him to be able to get to that spot, get over the hump after the struggles, and have the opportunity to do it again in 5 days.
Absolutely. I would like to see, though, how the workload starts to affect him as we get into September, because as you both have already mentioned, you're talking about somebody who's thrown a little bit under 130 innings this season, and not only are you approaching that threshold of the amount of innings you've ever thrown in a full season, but now you're doing it in more stressful innings because you're in the big leagues. And BT, you've made that jump before, and I've heard pitchers in the past talk about how it's just different. I mean, pitching in the big leagues, it does seem like it's more stress on you. Did you feel that way too?
Yeah, oh, for sure, for sure. Every pitch takes more out of you at the big league level. Like, there's so much focus and intensity on each pitch, and then you couple that in with a legitimate extra month. It's nothing mental about it. It's all physical, and you need to be able to answer the bell every day. And by the way, these games now for the Cardinals, and they've been in this for most of the year because it's been a bit of a battle in the Central, but as you look towards August, September, these games mean a ton.
Yeah.
I mean, there is so much that goes into every single one of them. First place is on the line. Winning the division is on the line every time you go out there. Certainly that takes its toll.
And you have to do this against teams like Kansas City. There are not a whole lot of games for the Cardinals to waste. And especially when they're playing teams that are not very good, even if you're getting no hit through six, you better find a way to win a ball game. And that's what they're going to have to do here for the rest of the year, especially against these Kansas City types.
No doubt about it. And it really is nice when you're in a situation like last night, when you get some runners on and you can have a guy like Matt Carpenter come to the plate to get you that hit that you need.
All right, I'm sensing something.
There's sarcasm in
There's a little something, right?
I hear it.
At the very least, some snark.
There's snark.
There's something.
And sarcasm.
Because that used to be a real statement. Yep. It used to be a thing, but you said it with your chest. You know, it's like, and then Matt Carpenter, boom, here he is. Hey, I don't care.
It was awesome.
Yeah,
it was great.
We saw him trying to drop down some bunts in hitters counts earlier on in the
game. 3-1 count, wasn't it?
No,
what the hell?
Look, hey, you know what the funny thing about that was, and I saw people railing him on Twitter about it. Damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Because what do we all want him to do? Do something, get on base, hit the ball the other way, drop down some bunts every once in a while. And then all of a sudden the guy tries to do it and he's lost it. If he's trying to drop down a bunt, get him out of there, whatever. He came up in a spot, he got a hit, and just shot one up the middle. I don't need him to hit a home run every time, but I do need you to keep the line moving.
That line was moving, man.
Finally,
six straight singles. I love it.
Do it, yeah. Brad Keller.
Hey, I had a
everybody else was hitting like hell. Yeah,
while the Cardinals game was going on last night, I had an epiphany.
You mean an epiphany?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Those.
Oh, I think the Cubs are a good group of players, but I don't think the Cubs are a really good team. I think that, as we talked about with the Cardinals earlier in the season, they aren't living up to the names on the back of their jerseys. They aren't living up to the baseball card stats. The Cubs kind of are, but as a unit, they're just kind of a mess right now.
Actually, Randy, what happened last night is Charlie Manuel's the Phillies hitting coach now, and
he
fixed them. That's how you
true.
Get double-digit runs.
It will happen sometimes.
In one day, it was a magical night.
Comes on in. Boys, you got this. You're good to go. Do you guys, just talking about that, how the Cubs group seems to be a bit discombobulated. I know we're going to hit on the Central a little bit later in the show, but do you think that any of that has to do with the uncertainty surrounding Madden?
I think so.
I think so, too. I think that's a little bit of it, at the very least. Not that players play different because of it, but maybe his attitude is a little bit different. Maybe he's not as loosey-goosey as he used to. Maybe all the little things that were working before and the petting zoos and all of the other, DJs out at stretch, maybe they need a little of that. Maybe they've lost some of that.
All right, here's what I think. Tell me what you guys think. I think no major league team should ever have a manager in his final year of his contract unless he's retiring, ever. You at least sign him for an additional season so there isn't that line of questioning throughout the year. And you know what? In the following year, if things aren't doing well and you want to fire him, you eat the money, but you can't have a guy in the clubhouse making the lineup, making the changes, being the leader of that clubhouse, and nobody knows if he's going to be around for much longer. I don't think you can have that.
99.9% of the time I agree with you. The only difference would be if it's clear to everybody, like it was here with Bill DeWitt and Tony La Russa, that Tony La Russa is going to be the Cardinal manager as long as he wanted, and he could have whatever contract he wanted, and he wanted to go year to year because he just didn't know. But it was made clear to everybody, players, fans, management, media, hey, Tony's going to be our manager if he wants to be our manager.
And that's fair.
Yeah. The only thing that I would push back on is I agree with that on a team that you believe to be a winning one. So one that is ready-made right now. I think it's okay to have a manager, especially one that maybe has been around for a little bit, little while. Maybe they've had some success, but all of a sudden, organizationally, you're transforming a little bit. You're whether you want to call it tanking, you're rebuilding. I would like to see how some young players actually grow under a guy. Not wins and losses, but how much better a team can get before I could extend that guy. I feel okay about something like that. When it's not a division is on the line or a World Series is on the line, because that's where the Cubs are at. I mean,
absolutely.
The Cubs are a team that are supposed to be fighting for everything.
There's no excuse for them to have a manager who's a lame duck or who's on the hot seat. You just, they have to, one way or the other, make a decision here, because you can't have people in the clubhouse that have no idea what's going on. I really do think that affects performance.
Well, the Cardinals did put 6 on the board against Kansas City last night. Their offensive struggles really did continue. We'll talk about what's happening next on 101 ESPN. Despite scoring 6 runs last night, the Cardinals are still 13th of the 15 teams in the National League with 526 runs scored. Only the Giants and Marlins have scored fewer runs than the Cardinals. And in OPS, on base plus slugging percentage, the Cardinals are also 13th, with only the Giants and Marlins trailing them. In 2016, the Cardinals averaged 4.81 runs per game. 2017, it was 4.7. In 2018, it was 4.69, and this year, it's 4.44. While baseball is scoring more home runs and notably hitting a lot more home runs, the Cardinals are one of the few offenses that has maintained a desire to win, but is having trouble scoring more.
Yeah, that's it's a bit of a scary trend, is it not? When you see the Cardinals' offense the last 4 years score less and less runs per game, while you look at offensive numbers as a whole
in their entirety.
Yeah, thanks, guys. In Major League Baseball, go through the roof. To me, that's a little bit scary, and it's a thing again. We know the Cardinals right now are very fortunate to be where they're at in the standings and to be tied atop the division with the Cubs. But do you think that this team can win a World Series swinging it the way that they're swinging it? I think it's going to be very hard.
It would be incredibly difficult.
The thing is, I mean, they'll beat up on the opposition that is struggling. You'll beat up on a bad guy every once in a while, and you'll have a big inning. And the Cardinals needed one last night, and they were able to do it, which was fantastic. Right now, it's about figuring out ways to win a game. But when you're looking at the bigger picture of things, and the ultimate goal of making it to the playoffs, because we know that's step one, but then winning a championship, the offense has to be so much better.
Yes, it does.
It has to be so much better than it is right now.
Now, I know it's a separate argument entirely, and we had this discussion yesterday about whether or not the current version of the game is better or if it's less interesting, whatever, with it being a home run strikeout kind of offensive league. Set that argument aside, because the reality is, in order to win, you probably have to be able to hit for power. And this team has only been better than the Pirates, Giants, and Marlins in the National League as far as hitting the home run goes. And that's a huge reason that they are where they are and not two or three games in front of the Cubs at the moment. If they had more offense, if they had been showing more power throughout the year, and on-base percentage, too. Don't get me wrong. That's another part of this, because this team doesn't really strike out a ton. Their strikeout rate is average. Their walk rate is average. But where they're really struggling is in hitting for power and in getting on base in general. And if they had been able to do that just a little bit better this season, they very easily would be two or three games up right now in the division.
And it's borne out by the way they hit. And maybe this is one of the reasons that they made the move the other day in relieving Mark Badaska of his duties and trying to get people to hit the ball harder. Hard hit percentage in Major League Baseball, Marcel Ozuna is ninth. His average hard hit percentage is 51.2%. The next Cardinal is Paul Goldschmidt, all the way down at 128th. They don't have enough people hitting the ball hard consistently.
And I don't think that has anything to do with why Buddha was fired. I just think that it ends up being one of those things where, we got to do something.
But Schilt always talks about hard hit percentage. That's a big thing for him.
Well, I don't recall Buddha ever saying, I don't like barrels.
No,
that wasn't his thing. He was more rhythm timing. I don't think it has anything to do with the overall stuff. But to the heart of the issue is, that's a problem. It's a problem when you're not hitting the ball hard. It's specifically a problem if, all right, so even if you top to bottom, look at the lineup for the Cardinals, and you saw it, right now it's safe to say that pretty much everybody in that lineup has underperformed. I mean, just overall blanket statement, certainly there are going to be some outliers.
Except maybe Colton Wong.
Yeah, he's been great.
I think he's better than
totally
what you
fine.
Expect.
Yep. But overall as an offense, they've underperformed. But if you were able to look at the team and say, okay, well, they don't have a high batted ball percentage, but or a high barrel rate or hard contact, but they put the ball in play and they figure out ways to get on. They go the other way. They move runners over really well. They play a great style of small ball and they manufacture runs. You can deal with those things.
Right.
But overall, this offense doesn't tend to do any of those things at a consistent level. We'll see doses of it, but you don't see it at a consistent level. There are, not to say that it's a good thing to not barrel the ball. Like you have to be able to do that overall as a ball club, and you'd like to be a lot higher in the rankings. But you have to be able to do other things really well, and they just haven't done that either.
If it's not going to be power, it has to be something, right? Which is what you're saying, and that's the truth. This team, the only thing they do offensively really well consistently is run the bases. And you know what? That doesn't really do you any good if you don't have enough people on base to run them. That's really the heart of the issue here. It's the two things we were talking about a moment ago. It's getting on base, and when you have guys on base hitting home runs, because that's how you win right now. And the argument of whether or not that's more interesting to watch, forget about it, because the point is you're trying to win ball games, and the way you win games right now, aside from pitching, offensively, is to hit home runs, and they just aren't doing it.
And this, in large part, comes back to Matt Carpenter, who hit 36 home runs last year. I'm sure the Cardinals expected him to hit 30 home runs this year. I'm sure they expected him to have a 370 on base. And the demise, I won't say a demise, the regression of Matt Carpenter is the primary reason that this offense has struggled. There are a lot of reasons. As we've mentioned, Wong is probably the only guy who's lived up to expectations. To me, Paul DeJong, even though he hasn't been really good since the first part of May,
overall numbers are totally where you
expect them. I didn't expect a ton more.
No, I didn't either. So he is what he is. Goldschmidt certainly isn't what you expected, but he's given you spurts. But the one guy who hasn't even given you a hot streak this year is Matt Carpenter. And that is distressing if you're a Cardinal fan, because that's a huge part of the reason that they aren't scoring as many runs.
Yeah,
and you mentioned Paul Goldschmidt. The thing about him is he might end up being at his career typical when he for home runs this year. He's at 26 right now. And even after the slow start when he wasn't doing much of anything, by the end of this season, he's probably going to provide for them about what you would have expected anyway.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the power.
So do we look at this right now then with the point, Randy, that Carpenter has given you relatively nothing when it comes to offense this season, but the Cardinals are still tied for first place. Does that give you like hope that it might happen? Like how much better this team could be if in fact it does happen? Do you look at it and just say, well, who cares? Even if it doesn't give you anything, that you're there. Like how do you look at that situation? Where's your glass, and is it half full or empty when it comes to Carpenter?
I am still hopeful. I wouldn't say confident.
I wouldn't either.
But I would say there's always hope, big boy.
All right, good. To me, again with Carpenter, while we haven't seen it, I still believe in his upside being higher than everybody else's when it comes to guys who might take that job.
Yeah, and I can't figure out. I wonder.
Maybe he just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, because even you watch a game like last night, that ball wasn't hit hard that he got the RBI, and it was great that he got it, but there's just something that is not there that used to be there with Matt Carpenter.
I would not be surprised when his career is over. He tells us, yeah, from like 2017 through however long he plays, I just didn't feel good. I couldn't walk. My back was killing me.
Yeah. You know, just talking about something that might be missing, and this is just eyeball test, nothing else. Speed. Like fast twitch is what I'm trying to say. Like anything where you just turn, like he used to, there was a quietness always in his swing, and the timing was all quiet and gets the hands back, but there was an aggressiveness when the bat came through the zone. And
like an explosiveness.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's no snap currently. Oh.
Could be shoulder. Could be back. Could be both.
Could be back tonight. Who knows?
Who knows, man?
Who knows?
But no, I wish I was. I guess I have a level of hope, but it's not. I'm where you are, Randy. It's not confident hope. It's like I know that there might be something still there with him, and there should be, I guess. I don't feel confident it's going to emerge here before the season's over.
Cardinals will open up a series in Cincinnati tonight, a four-gamer, and Dexter Fowler is still leading off in right field. Marp is hitting second and playing third base. Goldschmidt is your first baseman hitting third. Then Ozuna, DeJong, and Yadi back in there for the third time in a row. Wonger, a Rosarena back in there in center field hitting eighth. And Waka is on the mound.
Well, good for Rosie to be in there. By the way, we get a text message from the 314, which I like this take. Carpenter is the Cardinals' version of Jaden Schwartz. He's going to hit 13 homers in the playoffs.
Holy crap.
Like, where were you?
Well,
there you
happens.
Are.
Okay.
We'll take that.
Yeah.
See, that is hope.
That is hope.
Confidence.
That is extreme confidence.
You like that?
Sure.
I like
Me
that.
Too. If he's happy or she's happy, that's all I care about.
It's a Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. We will have more on the Cardinals game against the Reds tonight, plus more on MLS to St. Louis. That comes your way with your Hot Topics of the Day next on 101 ESPN. Michael Waka pitching for the Cardinals tonight at the So-So American Ballpark in Cincinnati. He'll be opposed by Sonny Gray. We gave you the Cardinal lineup that has Marp hitting second behind Dexter Fowler and Randy Arozarena back in there in center field hitting eighth. The Reds are kind of a threat now with Sonny Gray on the mound, and they've got a good rotation. Although, did you see yesterday, fellas, that Trevor Bauer got rocked?
Yeah.
Whew, not great.
That happens.
It does.
I wouldn't worry about it going forward
He's
if I were
good.
The Reds.
He's pretty good.
Yeah.
So the Reds will have Senzel in center field tonight, Joey Votto at first, Eugenio Suarez at third. The legendary Aristides Aquino is in right field. More home runs in his first 14 games than any major leaguer in history.
The guy's unbelievable.
9 homers, yeah.
And you watch him standing there in the box, and it looks like he's about to play beer league softball.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I stand when somebody's going to throw me the slow pitch. I just stand there, leaning way back out of the box, and just dive into it. And then he massacres baseballs. He's fun to watch.
He is. Philip Ervin plays left field and hits fifth. Freddie Galvis, the newcomer, 5-for-6 so far as a Red, is at second base. Then Iglesias at short, Barnhart behind the plate, and Sonny Gray on the mound as the Cardinals will try to extend their winning streak to 6 now.
Six. 6 is the number.
Serious number.
6. I tell you what, as much as we just got done doing an entire segment on the Cardinals' offense and how that needs to be better if, in fact, they want to be a playoff team and a team that can win a championship, which is still true. Tonight, it's all about Michael Wacha.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what Michael Wacha is able to do. His last start against the Dodgers was not a good start. What he has done throughout his entire career is dominated the Reds. He's been great against them. In his career, he's 11-1 against them at Cincinnati at the Great American Small Park. He's 6-1 with an ERA of 2.6. Like, he has been so good there.
Do I have to come up with a nickname for this ballpark now? You've got so American. What did you call it?
Great American Small Park?
Yeah.
Yeah, you need one too.
I'll think of something.
Okay. If you haven't heard already, Major League Soccer plans to announce that St. Louis will get an expansion team. Plans have been made for an event Tuesday in St. Louis, according to multiple reports. MLS leaders declined comment. The ownership group released a statement saying Major League Soccer is responsible for the timing of any announcements around league expansion, but we remain confident St. Louis has made a strong case for a team. So now we're going to get MLS. We've got a Stanley Cup. We've got the XFL. The Rams obviously left now. It's 4 years ago. With that being the case, with every good thing that's happened here, have you been able to? We want to hear your mic drops. How excited are you about MLS coming to St. Louis? And has it eased some of your angst that you got from the Rams departing?
Well, I'd have to say for some people, this is this does it. You know, you got a lot of soccer fans out there.
I think it grabs, you'll get some crossover fans. You'll grab a whole new group of fans with soccer. And then you'll have some saying, no, we lost a sport. And we got soccer. Some will say that. You know what I'm saying?
I wonder how many people are finally over it. Maybe time did it. Maybe the fact it's been a few years now.
Well, time's on our
time
side.
Time heals everything.
That's true.
Well, not everything.
Yes, it is.
There's some things it doesn't heal.
Oh, yeah.
Some things the doctor can't fix. That can't even take care of a lot of stuff. But you know what
Abstinence.
I'm saying. That will cure everything, except for boredom.
Yeah.
So there you go. We want to hear from you. The Mic Drop feature on the 101 ESPN app. How excited are you? The league has, actually the ownership group, announced plans for a special announcement on Tuesday at the Palladium. And in attendance will be ownership group members, Mayor Lyda Crewson, the president of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed, and additional special guests.
Randy, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
What's the Palladium?
Good question. I don't know, Mike Ryder, you know? No?
He didn't.
Okay.
Is it a venue?
Is
here?
It secret? Do you have to have a handshake? Is it a speakeasy?
65780.
Is there gambling at this place?
By the way,
I wish that the end of that, because I mean, it seems very apparent that this is happening and just waiting for Tuesday for the official word. I wish at the end of the comment there was a winky face emoji.
Oh, that'd be funny. Yeah.
We're confident.
As negotiations for a new CBA continue between the NFL and the NFL Players Association, a work stoppage guide has been offered by the NFLPA. What do you got, Ron?
Guys, the Palladium, that's that building that I think used to be a hospital, and it's kind of close to Lafayette Square, Soulard, in that area. I forgot what the name of the building is, but people live in it, and there's also a venue. An event venue.
It's an event venue. Okay.
Yeah. Sounds nice.
Good. So it is on 1400 Park Place.
Okay, we'll go there.
So it's real close to
Soulard.
Is it
right next to Boardwalk?
I don't think so, man.
I guess they have events there.
Obviously. It's been renovated, and they're still renovating parts of it.
Well, it looks very nice.
It's a really cool-looking building.
All right,
sounds
good.
Awesome.
So anyway,
now we know.
That's where the event's going to be.
Anyway,
MLS.
The NFLPA has issued a work stoppage. Yes, BT.
We got another one. Isn't that what Captain America's shield is made of? Is it
palladium?
Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
Can we confirm that?
Bulletin apparently official.
It's a precious metal. Look it up, geologist. It says here.
Players are preparing for a strike after the 2020 season in the NFL. Sources on both sides continue to insist a work stoppage is unlikely, but the NFLPA has said all along that its mission is to negotiate for the best while preparing for the worst.
The shield is made out of vibranium.
Vibranium? Oh,
that's pretty close.
I don't even know what vibranium is.
It sounds nice. Oh, is that,
okay.
from Black Panther,
the Black Panther,
right? I forget
exactly
the name of the mountains that are in there. Is it the Vibranium Mountains?
I don't know.
That stuff is legit.
But it must be really hard to find.
Yeah.
Because that shield is something.
The XFL has its first quarterback. It is veteran backup, former Oklahoma quarterback Landry Jones, who I liked a lot coming out of Oklahoma.
That's a good one.
He played for Bob Stoops for a couple of years at Oklahoma, and it would seem logical that he would play for the Dallas franchise that is coached by Bob Stoops.
That makes sense. That
I
makes
want Johnny
a lot of sense.
Manziel here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got to be around here at least. Find him some things to do. I want to go back really fast. I lost my train of thought when we were talking about that vibranium.
Your train of thought derailed a bit, huh?
Yeah, it did. With the NFLPA giving the work stoppage guides to players, that is, while it's not a big deal, because you do have to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to know, and it's smart to make sure that your players have all their ducks in a row. I don't think it's a great thing that we're talking about this with a couple of our pro sports right now in the NFL and MLB. Both of them are geared up, ramped up, or at the very least getting ready. I know Major League Baseball has a war chest of cash ready to do this. They've had their players preparing this for this for a long time. That is not a it's not a great thing to be talking about this with a couple of sports.
What happens when they do, if they do, if one or both of those sports are on strike at the same time or some kind of work stoppage,
right,
strike, lockout, whatever, what happens for us?
What do you
do? What do we do?
What do you do? Well, what do? We find new jobs. I put my wife's master's degree back to work, and we'll go from there.
1994, we had the baseball strike that canceled the World Series. St. Louis didn't have football, and we had a hockey lockout that canceled the first half of that season. We had bad Mizzou football. That's all we had going for us at that point in St. Louis. But we got through it. We had a whole summer. Well, actually, the 81 summer was bad, a 50-day strike that started on June 12th. But heck, a few days ago was just the 25th anniversary of the start of the 94 strike. That started on August 12th and went to the end of the season.
Damn.
That sucks.
Yeah, it was not great.
Be picking up a lot of hobbies at that point.
Absolutely.
Maybe I'd get a chance to golf a little bit more or something. Maybe, although probably wouldn't have income to go golf. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you could.
I don't know.
We'd find something.
Probably.
We'd figure it out.
By the way, we get like six messages telling us that vibranium isn't real. I don't recall us saying it was, but it's
neither was the Black Panther.
But the palladium
is where they lived. What?
The palladium is a real event,
and apparently it's in Iron Man's chest.
The palladium.
Oh yeah, that's the stuff that keeps him alive.
That's what it says.
Right.
Yeah. I think my ring might be palladium. Is that a possibility?
No, I think that's titanium.
No, it's. I don't know. I'll look that up, see if they make jewelry.
Okay. Two other notes for you. Number one, Justin Thomas is leading the penultimate.
Sorry.
Okay.
I didn't finish putting jewelry in. It came up with something else.
The second to last playoff round of the PGA season is the BMW Championship at Medina, just outside of Chicago. It's first round play. Justin Thomas in with a 65 with a one-shot lead over Jim Furyk and Ryan Palmer, Rory Sabatini, Scott Piercy, Tony Finau, Adam Scott, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, Joel Dahmen, Lucas Glover, and Jason Kokrak are all at 5 under par. And tomorrow, I will not be here, but you guys are going to be over at B-Dubs in Chesterfield.
Baby.
Buffalo Wild Wings. And I know that Big Sis is going to play some Fortnite afterwards. Is that right? Is he playing Fortnite?
No, I think he's playing FIFA.
Yeah,
yeah. We'll beat up on some people with FIFA. He played last time. Might be my turn this time. Either way, come on out. Come hang out. And while playing that, you got a chance to win a B-Dubs gift card. I mean,
ooh,
if you take
right.
one of us down, which... you're not going to beat us, but...
I'm going to have to try that burger you keep talking about.
It's ridiculous.
The All-American Cheeseburger?
Yeah.
Delish.
Get it in you.
So that'll be fun tomorrow. Buffalo Wild Wings Chesterfield over in Chesterfield Valley from 3 to 7 with BT and Ronge. Don't forget to use the mic drop feature, the 101 ESPN app. How excited are you about MLS to STL? Next up in the fast lane, NFL training camp is well underway, heading into our second preseason weekend. Eric Edholm of Yahoo will talk to us about what the big stories are in the NFL next on 101 ESPN. Get a chance to talk some football with Eric Edholm of Yahoo, who joins us now on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line on 101 ESPN with Brad Thompson and Chris Ronge. I'm Randy Carricker. Eric, great to have you with us, and thanks for your time today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks, gentlemen. What's going on?
Well, we're just kind of gearing up. I think people around here, while they're obvious there are no more Rams to watch, or at least for a lot of people, we still get ready for football. Everybody gets excited about fantasy, and I always love hearing about people's contract holdouts. Let's start with Dallas at this point. They got three guys that are lined up to get paid. All of them probably will at this point. When we go with Dak Prescott, looking at him, reports are he wants 40. They offer around 30. What is real? What is fake? What do you believe is going on with Dak Prescott?
Yeah, I mean, the 40 is obviously a number that I think shocked a lot of people and probably isn't very realistic. And, you know, you look at what Philadelphia did by getting Carson Wentz done earlier, you know, at that kind of $32, $33 million range per year. I think it was smart of them to be proactive, knowing that a division rival was facing a trickier situation with three guys that they have to get signed. And I guess you start with priority and you think to yourself, you can't really let Dak go. I guess you could, right? But that doesn't seem too realistic. And even with Amari Cooper dealing with some foot stuff now, I mean, you trade a first-round pick for him. You kind of, I don't want to say you're boxed into re-signing him, but you're kind of in that spot. So it really, in my mind, puts Ezekiel Elliott third in the pecking order a little bit. Plus, you know, they have a little bit more flexibility with him, another year of control, given that he was a first-round pick the year Dak went in the fourth round. And so first-rounders are going to get that fifth year. They can franchise him a year after that. It's just another year of control they can kind of lock him down with. So, so I do still think there's room to make a deal with Dak first, and I suspect that's probably the order it could come in. But you know, they've got three big decisions to make here, and how it's going to all work is going to be huge to find out.
Do you believe that Zeke would hold out for the year if he didn't get what he wanted?
No, but I think he could part of the year. I mean, he still wants to get his year of credit, you know, towards becoming a free agent. So he'd have to return by week seven. So the entire year doesn't feel realistic. You know, it doesn't really gain much from it. Le'Veon Bell, you know, I mean, really didn't get what he wanted out of doing that. So, you know, I think it's a different situation here.
So what I'm gathering in both situations with Zeke and with Dak, the team has all the leverage.
Yeah, most of it, right? But here's the one thing, though. If you look how Dallas has built this team, they've built it with Ezekiel Elliott as kind of the centerpiece of the offense. I mean, they've really, you know, built it up on the offensive line. You know, it's not as if they protected them. I mean, Tony Pollard, the rookie they drafted out of Memphis, might be a fine back one day. But, you know, he's not built to take the load the way Zeke is. So he's really kind of the centerpiece of this thing. And I know running backs, you throw the Todd Gurley deal out the window and other contracts that might be outliers. Look, it's a depressed market for running backs. It's been trending that way for some time. So that helps them. But at the same time, you take him out of the puzzle, it really does feel, unlike with the Steelers, who at least had a plan B and some other weapons and whatnot, it does feel like the Cowboys without Zeke is not nearly the same thing we're talking about with him on the field.
And Eric, I think that with Zeke, they're good enough to be a Super Bowl team if things fall their way. I think without him, they're not. I would think that if he misses a few games, that really opens the door for teams like Philadelphia, if the Bears can get some kicking, New Orleans, perhaps the Rams. I think that Dallas can really hurt themselves early if they don't have Elliott on the field.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, that defense took a lot of steps last year. You know, Prescott, while he's been up and down, maybe he didn't, you know, hasn't quite built on that rookie year flash. I mean, he's still better than a lot of quarterbacks who are starting the NFL, in my opinion. You know, Cooper, once he kind of got his footing there, I thought was great. They have some young receivers. So you're right. I mean, all the elements are there for them to be very good. But, you know, you get off to a slow start. He's not out there. Other issues crop up. you're right. This thing, it could be a house of cards after a certain point.
Eric, what happens with the Texans and Jadeveon Clowney?
I think he's getting traded. Here's the problem, though, is that there may not be a robust market of teams out there looking to send a first-round pick and something else. It does feel like they want a one and a little sweetener on top. I just don't know if there's a ton of teams. Now, to this point, the Eagles have said behind, you know, through back channels that they're not interested. But I think they could become interested, and they have a little bit of a cap flexibility to make it work if the price comes down. If they can somehow get it to a second-round pick and something else, or, you know, just a two, I think they would be willing to jump on it because, you know, adding another pass rusher to what looks like a very talented defense but might be, you know, kind of like with the Bears last year when they added Mac, they would, that was just the one piece the Bears needed. Maybe the Eagles view it the same with Clowney. Here's a special player. We can make this thing happen. We don't want to pay a first-round pick, but, you know, we'll go a little lower than that. I just don't know if there are a ton of teams right now without having a long-term deal figured out ahead of time that are willing to make that trade. So that's the tricky part about this whole thing.
You mentioned Todd Gurley earlier. How much should the Rams be encouraged by him apparently moving well in practice, knowing that it's not full game speed?
Yeah, you know, it's been so strange to read some of the comments, whether it's Sean McVay or teammates or other people, you know, with the Rams organization talking about him. It's all kind of shrouded in vagaries right now, and then you get little glimmers of optimism, like you said, or – you know, you hear questions about, is he traveling with the team in the preseason or not? You know, is he going to the Hawaii game, whatever? I mean, those aren't the biggest, you know, most important things, because some people have kind of hinted that this might be the kind of issue that isn't going to be a problem early in the season, but that managing his wear and tear and really kind of, you know, figuring out a great routine for him and putting a cap on how much they can use him is really going to be the problem. Because last year, as you guys know, he was a special, special performer the first, you know, 13, 14 games, whatever it was. But then it, over time, it built up, and it just really took its toll and just wasn't the same after that. So they could be dealing with this problem every single year, for that matter. You know, and it just becomes this cumulative effect. So, yeah, there are positive signs. There are unknowns. But at this point, I still think they have to have a great long-term plan on how to preserve them and how to use them best.
Yahoo's Eric Edholm is a Mizzou guy, and as you know, Eric, there's a modicum of hype around Mizzou. Are you buying that moderate hype?
Yeah. Do we have any info on the bowl ban yet? Do we have any info on that? I mean, that's been the big mystery when that news is coming down. But if you just look at the football team, I mean, there's some reasons to be excited. I think the run game is going to be great. Kelly Bryant's going to be a big part of that. You know, we know what Roundtree can do, Tyler Beatty. I expect a bounce back year from Alberto and some of those pass catchers that showed promise but also struggled at times last year. And the great offensive line. Defensively, they have some pieces I think they like. I love Jordan Elliott up front. I thought he played great down the stretch. But, yeah, I mean, it still has to come together. And if they get slammed with a lost appeal right on the verge of the season, or, you know, they lose the early game to West Virginia or something like that, you know, it can kind of pull the rug out from under this team. So I have some real cautious optimism about them, but just still some unknowns, really.
Were you surprised that they didn't, because I know every team was calling in trying to get some transfers. Were you surprised they didn't lose anybody?
I mean, that's a huge credit to Barry Odom in my mind,
sure,
right?
Is.
I mean, you know, the vultures start swarming, right? The questions about what was going to happen with the program and would other guys leave. And, you know, Tennessee was on that list, other big-name programs, et cetera, I'm sure were sniffing around. But, yeah, I think that's a big credit to what they're building. And, you know, there was a lot of doubt not too long ago with this program. But coach gets an extension. There's a little bit of, stability kind of figured out there. And maybe the players are really saying, hey, we've got something special here, or I like where I'm at. That's a great sign and a great message to other recruits that, you know, the house is not crumbling from within. So there may be other sanctions that are preventing them from, you know, going to a bowl game this year. But I think that's pretty darn good by that staff.
Eric, I know you're based in Chicago, and I know you keep a close eye on the Bears. Are they doomed now they missed out on Corey Vedvik?
That's right. Yeah, the future Hall of Fame kicker has yet to try a kick. I know everyone around here was a little annoyed that he went to a division rival, the trade with the Vikings there. But, you know, if they can solve this issue and put it behind them, my goodness, that would be such a relief for them. I mean, you know, you face a couple of tough games to start the year. Packers rivalry game, national televised game in the Thursday opener. Then you got to go to Denver and face Vic Fangio and the Broncos. You know, if there's a crucial missed kick early in that, and if, you know, you may have this roulette thing going on all year long where, okay, you settle on a kicker coming out of camp. He struggles early. Do you go back to the guy who lost the job? Do you try to sign somebody else? You know, I think what Matt Nagy has not wanted is for this thing to linger as long as it has, but I keep an eye on Elliott Fry. This is a guy who's, I think, just been a little bit more consistent just from start to finish of where we've been in the offseason program to this point. Did a little bit better in the preseason game the other night. Had a couple of big kicks in South Carolina in his career. I wouldn't count that kid out. I think he's got a shot, even though Eddie Pinheiro is still right in the mix.
Eric, great stuff as always. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it, and we will talk to you soon.
Have a great rest of the week, fellas. Football's close.
It really is. Thank you, sir. Eric Edholm of Yahoo with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, a new fighter coming your way in the 4 o'clock fight. Stick around and hear who it is in the Fast Lane.